Get all your GA essentials at Michael Murphy Sports, the go-to place for outdoor training gear and more at michaelmurphysports.ie.
A very good evening. Welcome along to another edition of The Score. Coming up on tonight's programme, we'll be speaking to 2012 All-Ireland winner Frank McGlynn as we look ahead to Donegal's All-Ireland quarter-final with Monaghan on Saturday. A game, of course, which will be fully live here on Highland as from the 4 o'clock throw-in this coming Saturday afternoon. More on that later. Plus, we'll also be hearing from Mark English, the Fun Valley AC man, has been in record-breaking form in 2025. And we'll hear all about him looking to continue that as he continues his build-up towards the World Championships later in the summer. But as we do on each and every Score programme, we are going to start with League of Ireland football. Fun Harps, of course, had a tremendous win on Monday against the league leaders in the First Division, Dundalk. Well, since the break, Derry City have gone unbeaten and they picked up two big wins last Friday and Monday against Dublin opposition. Harps this coming weekend are up against Treaty United down in Limerick. And also on Friday night, Derry City have a home tie against Drogheda United in the Premier Division. So to look at those two fixtures and more, we're joined this week by our regular contributor, former Fin Harps player, Joe Boyle. Joe, a very good evening. How are you doing?
Good evening, Oisin. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Joe. And looking forward to the action on Friday night for the North West sides, but in particular, Fin Harps. And there must be a fantastic feeling in that group at the minute, Joe, because they beat the league leaders. They took their first 1-10 games, beating the league leaders on Monday night. That was a fantastic result for what essentially is a very, very young group of players.
It's brilliant. Like, when you look at the league table there, you only see one negative result for Dundalk all season, and that came in Balmafay on Monday night. And, you know, for them to get through that match and come through and manage to get all 3 points, what a lift for Kevin and all the players. And, you know, they had two draws, and to turn those draws into a win and to come out with that, it has to be a great filler for the team. And look, they've got a difficult match this weekend when they head to Treaty on Friday evening, but you know, you cannot but be full of beans after that result.
Full of beans, surely. It was a fantastic result for them. And listen, they'll carry a lot more confidence now going into their next game against Treaty down in Limerick on Friday night. And listen, when we look at the standings, Treaties are currently fourth in the table, but they've only actually lost one game more than Fin Harps. I mean, you look at the teams that are all above Harps, Longford, Kerry, Wexford, UCD, they've all lost more games than the Donegal side, so they have, Joe.
Yeah, and I think that's where Harps' issue has been. They've had quite a number of draws, and if they could have turned one or two of those draws into victories, like, you know, down in Athlone, they were very, very unfortunate down in Athlone. But what I would take out of the last two matches, which I think is really positive, and I think Kevin will be looking to build on as well, is they've had two clean sheets. So for me, that's very, very important. And the column that does concern me is the goals for, but the goals against stands up with most of the teams in the league, apart from Dundalk and Cove, who are way ahead of everybody else. But, you know, they've not been conceding too many goals, and, you know, they could just score one or two more, then they'd definitely be turning those draws. And when you look at the table as well, Dundalk and Cove are well ahead of everybody else. But from Bray down, everybody, I think, is in with a chance at the minute of heading into the last series of games, into that second half of the season, with getting a chance in the playoffs. And I do think if Harps could get something down in Treaty this weekend, then they'd be in a great position to start climbing the table. Because if you can't take confidence from beating Dundalk and the league leaders, and then, you know, this is the time now for Harps to push on. And I know it's been tough for Kevin over the last couple of weeks. The window is opening in the next couple of days as well. So hopefully he might get one or two bodies in. Hopefully he's getting one or two bodies back into his squad as well. And, you know, just to add a little bit to the young squad that's there. And, you know, when you look at the squad, you have to talk about the young Corey Sheridan, where he's come in and he's had two clean sheets in a row. You know, that's a huge filler. Has to be a great, great filler for Kevin and the management team to see another one of their young players coming through and filling that gap over the last couple of weeks when Oisin Cooney's been doing his leave insert. And to think that you're talking about going to Athlone, where there were so many players missing because they were doing exams and their leave insert and playing in the League of Ireland. You know, they are in a good place in a lot of ways, disappointed where they are probably sitting in the league, but in a lot of ways, Kevin and his management team must be really happy with what he's got out of the players.
Yep. They have yet to beat Treaty this season. They lost the opening game down in Limerick 3-1. Then at Finn Park at the start of May, they went down by 2-0 against the Limerick side. But are they in better shape for this game now off the back of Monday night?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I would say as well is they've got that couple of days. I know it is Friday and it was Monday to Friday, so I'm sure the players have been resting up. And coming out of a result like that, it always gives you a speedier recovery. You know, if you had got beat 1-0 and had been disappointed, you know, it would be difficult. But I think that's an important one that they did pick up that, and that they build on that now at the weekend, and you know, try and keep the squad in place over the next couple of weeks and get one or two bodies back into the squad would be very, very important. And some of those young players, like he took Gav McAteer out the last night, so trying to shuffle the pack and get one or two fresh legs and fresh bodies in on Friday would be very, very important for Kevin as well.
We wait to see if the Harps are going to make it back-to-back ones. Treaty of the opposition. It's down at Marketsfield on Friday night. Kickoff time is at 7:45, and we will have live regular updates from that game. Michael Cook will be on reporting duty as Harps go in search of what would be a fifth win of the season on Friday, and they'll be looking to make it back-to-back victories as well. Then again, when you think about it, a draw away from home would probably be a decent result as well for the Harps. The other games that have been played on Friday night in the First Division, Athlone Town, who are bottom of the table, are taking on third place Bray Wanderers. Wexford are meeting Kerry, and two sides battling it out for sixth place. Wexford currently sixth, Kerry are in seventh, and I suppose the big game is the battle of the top two. Dundalk 1 point ahead of Cove Ramblers. Dundalk having suffered the first defeat. Maybe Cove are snuffing a bit of blood here going into this fixture, are they, do you feel, Joe?
Absolutely, and you know, it'll be a big test for Dundalk as well. That, you know, when you're tipping along there nicely, you've gone almost 20 games without a defeat, and you know, it does ask questions of the Dundalk squad. When you're tipping along nicely and winning, it's you know, it does give you a huge amount of confidence. We spoke about Harps getting a little bit of confidence, so it's what a time for Cove to get them after that defeat in Balbuffet to try and get a good rattle at them to see how that pan hands out for Cove. No better time for Cove to be getting them to play them and see how that goes on Friday. It'll be a lot of eyes on that, because that could open up the door for Cove to challenge Dundalk, which we thought Dundalk were home and dry. And the other one is it just keeps the other teams from Bray down, just in that chance of trying to get up the table and stay in those playoff positions.
Let's move on to the top flight Premier Division, and obviously the big talking point is around Shelburne this week and Damien Duff making his exit. It was a bit of a strange situation, wasn't it, as Shells of course went into the games then this week with no Damien Duff, the man that led them to the title. But was it right for Duff to walk away after what he said last week about his squad?
Oh, I'm not sure. You know, Damien has said a lot of things this year, and you know, we've taken great enjoyment out of his pre and post match comments. I think he was trying to get something out of his players. I just want to see what plays out over the next couple of weeks to see what happens. What Damien did with Shelburne to get them to the league title last year, you know, he always had high standards, and I'm sure, you know, being 14 points off the lead of Shamrock Rovers, that's a bitter pill for him to swallow. And, you know, I would think he was hoping for better. I know his squad, he got a few players in, but like, he would never have thought that he would have won just 7 games so far. But again, the draws are killing them as well, 6 defeats. So that's what is really killing them. Those draws and those matches and these tight matches. And that's where both divisions in the League of Ireland, the draws are killing teams, because you know, you're losing 2 points. You're not getting the advantage of a home one or an away one. So for me, I'd like to see what happens. You know, there was rumours that Damien would be going to England to a job in the Premiership. So I'd like just wait and see what is happening. But we will miss him. I think he's been a great addition to the league. You know, his spats with Bradley at Shamrock Rovers has been great. You know, what he's done with the team. And from a Fenn Harps and a Donegal point of view, Mark Coyle captained Shelburne to the league, and you know Mark was probably an example of what Damien was looking for, somebody who really got behind his team, got stuck in, played well and above his level last season to lead the team to the league title. And when Damien brought in new players this season, he kept Mark on board. So I, you know, hopefully in days going ahead that we might get a chance to sit down with Mark and speak to him now that Damien is gone. But I did see comments Mark made about Damien during the week, and you know, he was disappointed. You could hear in his voice that he was disappointed that Damien had left, but he was also he was definitely singing his praises and what Damien and Mark had got at Shelburne. And I think the people at Shelburne would be grateful for that league title. And, you know, what a way it was won last season up in Derry as well.
Yeah. They drew 2-2 with Waterford and their fixture on Monday, but they go to AM&DC Park now on Friday to play Galway on the road. They haven't won too much on the road this year, but can they get 3 points there? And that would be sort of the injection that the Shell boys would be looking for.
Yeah, and look at from my point of view, the last time we were on, we were singing the praises of Galway, where they were flying, they were going really, really well, and you know that has flattened out for them over the last couple of weeks now, where they, you know, they've won 7, drawn 7, and lost 7, and you know Galway are a very, very difficult team to play against and to beat, and you know you could have possibly got an easier fixture this week than to be heading to Galway. I'm not sure whether Joey O'Brien will get them up again or manage to get 3 points down in Galway. It could be another draw down in Galway for Shelburne this week. So, you know, that would be another very, very difficult assignment for them.
Yeah. Derry City have a couple of games in hand, currently sitting fourth in the table. On Friday night, they play host to third place Drogheda. They're separated by just a point. But Derry are going into this game off the back of two very impressive results. They went to Dublin twice and 4 days, so they didn't beat Shells and then beat St Pat's on Monday night as well. They're back at their home patch and they'll be looking to convert that now into a bit of home form, so they will, Joe.
Yeah, look at Derry's season didn't start great. You know, they had a few up and down results at the start, you know, where they lost 3 of their first 4 games. But when you look at them in the last couple of weeks now, they had those two reversals against Shamrock Rovers and Bowes and the Brandywell and Dalymount. But when you look at their form since probably the beginning of April, it's been very, very good with just those two defeats in there and 2 draws. So they've gone on a really, really good run. And, you know, coming out of Shelburne with a win and coming out of St Pat's with a win, and 2-1-0 wins would be that's a good sign of a team when you can go away from home and win twice on the road 1-0. So coming to the Brandywell now and against Drogheda, it's an important match for both teams, but particularly for Derry. If they could do that, then they'll start hunting down Bohemians then in second place. And you know, I think Tiernan has done really, really well with his team, and he's starting to get them firing now on many fronts.
And they've added to their squad this week again. Adam Russell has joined from Adrianians. So already, Tiernan Lynch is looking at bolstering his squad. Does he need a few more, or is it just a case of getting what is there to click a wee bit better, Joe?
I think to make a push now, because when you look at it, there will be a lot of matches coming up. And like you take this week there where they've, you know, they've played Friday, Monday, Friday. There's a couple of more of those weeks coming up. And, you know, with the teams in the League of Ireland now having European football, you could end up having 3 games in a week because other teams that you're playing against has European matches. So, you know, I do think he probably does need to bolster his squad a little bit. And again, 1 or 2 players coming in. And there is some rumours at the minute that there could be players leaving the Brandywell. I've seen some comments this week that there could be a few players. So I would expect, and you know, sometimes for a club like Derry, it's healthy that the week 1 or 2 come in and 1 or 2 go, just to shake things up. But definitely for Derry, they'll be looking to build on the form that they're in at the minute.
Yeah. St Patrick's Athletic obviously fell to Derry on Monday night at Inchicore. We were all tipping Pats towards the end of last year that they would be contenders for the title. It hasn't gone to plan for Stephen Kenny around Inchicore at the moment, has it?
No, and to think that they've lost 9 matches, you know, that's a big one for them to, you know, that's huge to think that Stephen Kenny at this stage of the season has lost nine games, and they could do with turning a few of those losses into draws or into victories. But you know, he's got to be coming under pressure because he's got a really good squad there, really good group of players there, and he doesn't want to be falling off the pace. Like, he's just 4 points behind Derry. After getting beaten, if he had won that game, he'd be sitting in a really good position. But that's where that Premier Division at the minute. Like, you take any given week, you could lose to any of the teams that's playing there, and I think that's what's been shown in the leagues, where it's very, very competitive. And I think Pats have found that, where teams are really lifting their game against them, whether it's the fact that Stephen's the manager there or what it is, or whether they see them as being arch rivals. But, you know, they're not getting many easy matches there at the minute.
Two other games to mention: Bows against Sligo Rovers. Sligo, of course, moved off the bottom in recent weeks. Can they trouble the Dublin side, who are looking to hunt down Rovers at the top of the standings?
Yeah, I think, you know, John has had a good couple of weeks. He's had a couple of challenge weeks. I know he's brought in one or two players there as well. And Patrick McLean has signed for them. And, you know, Sligo do need it. They're sitting just second bottom at the minute. And again, they need to get out of that bottom place, where Cork, I see, have strengthened as well. So all those teams down there, it's going to take a big push for Sligo to catch Waterford. They're 9 points behind Waterford at the minute. That's a lot of positive results when you've only won five matches this season so far for Sligo. So I think at the minute Sligo's best prospects at the minute is to stay above Cove, stay second from bottom, and try and take on that team who comes through the playoffs in the first division. But, you know, to get that third place from bottom in the Premier Division, it's going to take a huge ask off Sligo Rovers. And, you know, that result that they've had in the last week or so would be very, very important that they keep building. And Sligo's a team that needs a draw, needs a win, so anything they can get in the next couple of weeks will be very much welcomed.
And Joe, the final game is Shamrock Rovers against Waterford. Rovers going into this game having lost to Bows in the big derby on Monday night. But looking at the history of Rovers and Waterford, it's been a while since Waterford actually beat Shamrock Rovers. And would you expect it to follow a similar path on Friday?
You know, Shamrock Rovers over the last couple of weeks have been going quite well. You know, they've been going in good form. But, you know, that's a big result for Bohemians on Monday night to turn them over and beat them 2-0. I don't think too many people were expecting that. But Bows have been excellent. I have been one of the people who have been concerned about Bows at the start of the season. But, you know, the job Alan Reynolds has done with them and Stephen O'Donnell has done with them is great. And for Shamrock Rovers, I really didn't see that coming, where it had been a 2-0, and I think it was comfortable enough for Bows as well. So Shamrock Rovers are certainly looking to bounce back. And, you know, in Waterford, they're dangerous. Waterford are dangerous at the minute. And, you know, at home, travelling down there, they'll be looking to try and build on their season so far. They were going well earlier part of the season, but they have struggled in the last couple of weeks. But it'll be a big ask for Waterford to get anything off Shamrock Rovers this week.
All right then, Joe, we look forward to the games on Friday night. As always, we appreciate your time, or taking time out to speak to us here in Highland. Enjoy the football on Friday evening.
Thanks, Oisin, and hopefully it'll be another 3 points for Kevin and the boys down in Treaty.
Yeah, hopefully so. Thanks again, Joe, and we'll catch up again soon. Okay, time for a commercial break here on Highland this Thursday evening. We'll be back with more On The Score coming up after these.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure, the Northwest leader in sports equipment for clubs and schools, at michaelmurphysports.ie.
And you're welcome back to the Score programme. You can, of course, nip over to the sports section and the playback section of our website, highlandradio.com, where you can listen back to and watch the playback of our dedicated GA programme and podcast, which, of course, is the DL Debate presented by Brendan Devaney. It's available now from last Monday. It airs, of course, each and every Monday evening. And at this stage of the Score programme tonight, we're sticking with Gaelic games and looking ahead to the All-Ireland quarterfinals, where, of course, Donegal and Tyrone are both set for action on Saturday. Tyrone started at 6:15. Donegal play Monaghan at 4:00. That game, of course, is live here on Highland with a full match commentary. I'll be joined by the two Brendans, Mr. Devaney and Mr. Kilcoyne, and commentary from that one will have build up as from 3:30. The games on Sunday will see Meath against Galway and Armagh against Kerry. We're certainly down now to the business end of the All-Ireland Series, and to look ahead to the matches, particularly Donegal's one against Monaghan. We're now joined by 2012 All-Ireland winner, Mr. Frank McGlynn. How are you doing this evening, Frank?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Yeah, Oisin, enjoying the year's football so far.
Yeah, it certainly has been entertaining. But Frank, I suppose we'll start with the hot topic, that is the six-day turnaround. Donegal, the last to play in the preliminary round and first out in the quarterfinals. There's 6 days in it. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of commentary about it over the last number of days, particularly from Donegal people saying that it's very unfair. Listen, others down the country are saying that we just need to suck it up. But what's your take on the whole situation, Frank?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's probably that just you need to suck it up. It's probably we've no other choice but to. But certainly, you know, I suppose from a Donegal perspective, even a supporters' perspective, it does seem to be the way that Donegal always seems to come out in the worst end of these decisions. I suppose even when the draw for the, you know, the neutral game against Mayo was even up for debate. It was always either going to be Mayo we're going to lose out or Donegal we're going to lose out on that one, and it was Donegal who suffered that time and having to travel to the Hyde. And look, there's no easy way around these things. One of the two teams were always going to have an unfair advantage if it came up to the province of Ulster. But I suppose with the last team out last weekend there, you would have expected maybe to have some grace, you know, with regards to the 7 day turnaround. But I suppose the GA, in all honesty, before the fixtures were put out, once the draw was made, we probably always knew that Donegal and Galway probably weren't going to be a double header with the other teams, with Armagh and Dublin, probably the other two teams involved in games. So one of the two teams, whether it's Galway or Donegal, we're always probably going to lose out, probably based on a financial point, more than anything. Me personally, I probably would have loved to be heading to Breffni Park this weekend to play. You know, maybe the players might rather get to Croke Park earlier and play in the quarterfinals. But I think it would have been, we were up previously in Breffni Park, you know, playing Cavan, and you know, I enjoyed the venue. You know, I haven't been too many games as a spectator, but look, the decision was made to head to Croke Park with all four games, and unfortunately then some team's gonna lose out, and once again it seems to be Donegal. It's the team that's suffering the most.
Yeah, but this situation hasn't happened before in the format that is the All-Ireland Series, the modern format of it. No team has been asked to play on a 6 day turnaround, and it's more likely going to be the case as well, Frank, that it may not happen again, because this is going to come up a Congress and a special Congress at some stage along the way as well. So it is a bit unfair.
Oh, it definitely is, yeah. I suppose when you take the amount of football, I suppose, and you can go back through the Ulster Championship and the three group games that Donegal have played, you know, they have a lot of football, more so than any other county in Ireland. And definitely that 6 day turnaround has a huge impact, because it really leaves you from Monday morning to Thursday, really, is the only 4 days of the week you have, because you're travelling Friday and, you know, game Saturday then. So it leaves a very, very short window, and it's hard to, I suppose, do the proper preparations. You can look at Donegal, probably didn't know their opponents until early Monday morning. So the preparations for that, you know, and then getting the face-to-face time then between Monday and Thursday is difficult, while also trying to factor in the recovery time for players, you know, where they can, you know, relax and maybe switch you off for parts of the week. But it's a very, very short window when you take into account that Donegal, you know, travelling on the Friday also to get ready for a Saturday game.
Yeah. Last year, Jim McGuinness highlighted that maybe the year caught up with the team when they lost out in the All-Ireland semi-final. Is it a worry, Frank, for you that Donegal have played so much football now and the level that the football has been played at as we come now to this stage of the championship? Does it concern you in any way?
No, I suppose if you'd asked me that question 3 weeks ago, I probably would have had a greater concern. Having watched this past couple of games now in the group, if anything, I do think Donegal have probably had their little dip after the Ulster final at probably the right time of the year. I suppose as a spectator, and I suppose as a former player, I went to McCood Park with a little bit of excitement there at the weekend, you know, knowing that it was finally we were getting to knockout football. And I think you could see the reaction of some of the players, you know, that they did, you know, while the performance levels in the first half probably wouldn't have been what they expected. You could see that, you know, they were in the second half, that game had to be won, and they went and won it very early and put it to bed very early. And I do think when you go through the players, you know, there's some of them like Oisin Gallen, they're stepping up now that, you know, at knockout football, I think you'll get the best out of players. And I'm definitely looking forward to this weekend. The factor in of the fatigue and the training, I think this weekend's the big game. Once they get over this weekend, you know, they could off again for a 2 week period heading into a semi final. And I think they'll manage that very well. It's all about just probably getting over the line now. This Saturday evening against Monaghan, and the year certainly opens up for Donegal and for all players and spectators alike.
Yeah, it certainly does. You mentioned Oisin Gallen there. He was going to be my next question to you, or my next point rather to you, that it's all about timing, and Oisin at times has struggled to get the scores on the board, but that performance has probably come at the right time now for Oisin, and he'll get a big lift off it, so he will.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I suppose any forward, you know, you want to be scoring, you want to be playing well and contributing to the team. And I suppose Oisin, he'll know himself. He probably would have been disappointed in some of his earlier performances, but certainly now, I suppose with the home venue and playing in McCool Park probably helped last Sunday as well. And you know, he got an early score or two to settle himself down. And from then on, you know, he looked to have that confidence back. Where, you know, if he got a chance at all, if he got a half a yard, he was looking to score and looking to get on the end of attacks. And heading to Croke Park now, I suppose at the weekend, that'll probably create another bit of energy among the players, with a bit more space to work with in Croke Park. So hopefully that'll bode well heading into the game on Saturday now for Oisin and for a lot of the players.
Yeah, and you're getting Mark and Finnbar Rorty in that as well, because he'll have no problem getting up and down the big field of Croke Park. It was sensational last weekend, Frank.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, both himself and Patrick Morgan, you know, they add so much to the attack, not alone in defence, but you know, in the modern game now with the rule changes, it seems to have really suited those footballing type defenders. You know, that are well able to do both, and they're certainly two players in Patrick and Finbar. They're definitely striving and still holding their own. You know, not found wanting in the defensive side of things. I suppose both of them, especially Finbar, you know, were involved in a lot of the contact, a lot of the turnovers that Donegal get, you know, and it's a great sign for a young player that, you know, to have that confidence. And, you know, generally speaking, it would take maybe an inter-county player a year or two to settle in, but, you know, to think that Finbar's only joined this year, you know, he's you would think he's been playing for 5 or 6 years now at this stage.
Yeah, and the squad seems to be in good enough shape now, having looked at it at the weekend. Obviously Jason came back and got a start as well, so he's got more time in there too, and when you factor in the way Michael Murphy's playing as well, it's all, back to the Oisin Gallen point, I suppose, it's all about timing and things are starting to click again properly.
Yeah, that's it, and I suppose like any day, you know, your 15 that starts are not all going to have a good day, and that's one of the pleasing things that with Donegal, there's always been 2 to 3 players that have stepped up in the big times. You know, Michael Murphy probably would have had a quieter game by his standards there at the weekend, but at the right time he had that 2-pointer that kind of settled things in the second half, and that's been a core sign throughout all the performances. You know, when the pressure was coming on, or when the game was kind of there to be won, there was always different players stepping up, and you know, you're going to have that at the weekend too, like Shaquiran Thompson, Michael Langan, even Jason McGee getting his first start. It's certainly going to be a boost for him. You know, Hugh McFadden came in at half time and done a really good job in the second half, you know, got on a lot of ball and spurred Donegal on in that early part of the second half. So I think the signs are definitely positive, and I think the players, you know, I can only speak, I suppose, for myself. These are the games that you're always looking forward to. You know, you nearly wanted to fast forward the year to get to Croke Park and get into those knockout games. And I do think that confidence is within the camp in Donegal. And I'm hoping we see that in their performance levels now at the weekend.
Yeah. So what about the opposition? Obviously, they've had a longer period off. Donegal know all about Monaghan, and they beat them in the quarter final of the Ulster Championship, and Monaghan did, of course, run us very, very close in that occasion. But they seem to have improved through the series. They've had a longer break as well. What's Monaghan going to bring to the table, do you think, on Saturday evening in Croke Park?
Yeah, I suppose Monaghan, their danger is always in the forward line. You know, even right throughout the league, going through their scores, you know, they're hitting the high 20s. You know, above 30 points in a lot of their games. So, you know, they certainly have a forward line that creates scores from all over, and and either similar to Donegal in that their defenders, you know, that they come forward at pace, and they'll probably take a little bit of confidence from that game up in Clonus that, you know, they probably left it a bit too late. You know, they closed right in towards the end of that game, you know, and had a chance maybe if they were a bit more switched on towards the end of the game with the Hooters system, you know, they could have had a chance to, you know, to equalise that game. But I suppose on the other end of things then, while they're scoring heavily, you know, they're up there in the 20s nearly every game that they're conceding at the other end. I suppose the two-week break, the six-day turnaround, it's a big factor now. If Donegal get the victory at the weekend, they'll say that maybe Monaghan were stale coming in after having a two-week break. Who knows? But I suppose you would point to the group that Monaghan were in, you know, playing Louth, playing Clare, you know, and then playing Down on their last game. You don't know, is that standard as high as what Donegal would have been playing when you take Tyrone, Mayo into consideration, the games that Donegal have had. So it's going to be interesting to see as to what level Monaghan are at after having that 2 week break. But I do know they'll be approaching the game with a lot of confidence. You know, when Monaghan are get to Croke Park, they generally do themselves justice and perform very well.
Might just look at the other games that have been played in the quarter final, Frank. And would Tyrone be bringing any confidence to Croke Park to take on the Dublins in the second game on Saturday?
Yeah, I suppose Tyrone definitely, it's probably hard to read, so it is. You know, they got their victory in McCool Park, so that against probably what Donegal would say would be a below par performance for the Donegal group. And then I suppose there's a disappointment against Mayo, and then they seem to spark to life a little bit against Cavan. How much I suppose you can read into that game. Cavan had been, you know, shipping a couple of heavy scores in the group stages, so it's going to be interesting to see the Tyrone approach. But I do think the players that Tyrone have, they're going to certainly ask serious questions of the Dublin defence and the pace they have. You know, if Darren McCurry and Darren Canavan are on song, you know, Dublin are going to have to be on song also to match them in the defence. I suppose the big one for that game then is the Conor Callaghan factor. You know, if he's fit and taken part, I think the Dublin forward line has a different look to it then. But it's certainly one that Tyrone definitely will be looking forward to it. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them come out on top against Dublin.
Yeah. On to the games on Sunday. First up is Meath against Galway. Can Meath add the name of the Westerners to the list of the big counties they've already beat this year in Championship football? Remember, they beat Dublin and they beat Kerry. Is it going to be Galway next for them?
Yeah, when you look through Meath, you know, they've been a little bit sporadic. You know, the teams that maybe you would expect them to beat, you know, they haven't been performing against. And then, you know, they play against the likes of Kerry and Dublin and then come out with victories. And not just, I wouldn't just say victories, you know, they were comfortable victories against both those teams. You know, they had a massive lead up against Dublin early in the game, and, you know, they'd have a good few points to spare against Kerry as well. So Meath, I suppose, they seem to have a little bit of steel about them this year, you know, that with a new manager on board, they seem to have a lot more confidence in themselves. And I do think they're going to put in a big performance. But I think Galway, probably similar to Donegal and similar to the bigger teams, have always been tracking towards Croke Park in the quarter-final, semi-final days. And it's probably a game that they've been targeting, and they're probably hitting a little bit of form at the right time. If Shane Walsh gets over his injury from last weekend, they're going to have the right players on the pitch at the right time. I think they might just have a little bit too much for Meath.
And the last game is the big one. Last year's All-Ireland champions, Armagh, up against Kerry, who have probably been playing at below par this year in the series. One of the big guns are going to fall at the weekend, that's for sure, in that tie. Who are you expecting to come through it, Frank?
Yeah, it's a tight game, so it is, and it's hard to call. So it's probably a game that Kerry have been wanting, I would say, since last year's All-Ireland semi-final, when really they probably had the better of Armagh, only they let it slip towards the end of that game. And it's always been the talk of Armagh, I think, right throughout the year. The big question for me now is Armagh, while they've topped their group, you know, they've had that break now, and, you know, that second year syndrome, does it start to show signs from now on with Armagh? Because they've managed the year really well. You know, their fitness levels seem to be maintaining, and their freshness seems to be maintaining, but they've still three games of football to go if they're going to retain that All-Ireland title. And it's going to be a huge ask for Armagh to keep those standards high. And I suppose if they're at the pitch, if they're at the right level, I would fancy Armagh to get the better of Kerry. But if there's any slacking off from the Armagh levels. Kerry have the forwards that are probably going to ask serious questions off Armagh, but it's definitely one. I wouldn't be surprised to see that one head for a draw or a kick of a ball in the last couple of minutes to see who comes out on top.
Yeah, right. Give us your final four then, Frank, before we finish up.
Probably go with Kerry, Galway, Tyrone and Donegal.
Good man. Okay, we'll wait to see if that happens. Frank McGlynn, many thanks for joining us on the Score programme this evening. We appreciate you taking the call.
Thank you, Oisin. Thank you.
Frank McGlynn there, the man that has 5 Ulster Winners' Medals, an All-Ireland Winners' Medal, and an All-Star as well, looking ahead to the action this weekend. That, of course, is our feature match and full live match commentary from Croke Park as from the 4 o'clock throw-in on Saturday. We will be live with the build-up from 3:30. There is a club action here in the Northwest taking place this weekend. I suppose it starts on Friday. Senior Hurling Championship continues in Donegal. Buncrana play Carndonagh. St Eunan's take on Burt in the big game of the weekend. And McCool's will host Setanta. While in the Intermediate and Junior Championship, it's St Eunan's against Letterkenny Gaels. Dunloe play Setanta. And Aruif Ballyshannon are up against Four Masters. Those games all due to start around 7:30 on Friday evening. Division 2 on Friday, Fianna Gaels take on the Padraig Muff, and in Division 3, Pettigo play Neavulton. But there is a full programme of football across the three divisions, Division 1 to Division 3, taking place on Sunday afternoon. No action on Saturday, of course, due to Donegal's involvement in the All-Ireland Series. We go to athletics. Mark English says his aim is to continue to lower the Irish 800 metre record ahead of this year's World Championships. The Donegal Olympian has been in excellent form this summer, breaking 1 minute and 44 seconds twice in recent weeks. English also landed a European indoor bronze medal in the 800 back in March, and he's focused on even going faster before the Worlds in September. The Fun Valley man has been speaking with Owen Sheehan from Off the Ball.
Well, I suppose before I first raced, my first outdoor race of the season on the 24th of May, I would have spent 5 weeks at altitude in Flagstaff in the USA, and I was over there training with a group of world-class athletes, and I felt like I benefited a lot from that. And it was my second stint of altitude this year. I think those things helped. Also, I was with my coach over there in Flagstaff too. And he would have been at two or three of my races as well this year. So yeah, it's been a good start to the year, and I hope to be able to continue with more good races.
Take us back to after the Olympics and after last season ended. You've obviously changed a few things in terms of the coach and in terms of your approach. What did you take from last season to push you into that direction?
For me, it's just about really trying to build consistency. So after the Olympics last year, I didn't really take much time off. I just wanted to keep stacking that training and compounding it as much as I could. And I managed to double my training volume as well. And I think those things combined with the altitude training, the new coach, and maybe the different training structure involved in that has allowed me to reach new heights this year. So, and as well as that, you know, I'm obviously not working at the minute too, and all these things help. You know, it's never just one reason, but it's been really good to start performing to where I know I'm capable of doing this year.
So your coach is Justin Rinaldi, the Australian former 800 metre champion. And from what I've gathered from reading about him, he is just a complete nerd when it comes to the 800 metres.
Yeah, maybe you picked that up from what I said about him, but it is true that he loves the event, and he kind of consumes it as much as he can. And I think that helps because the 800 metres is quite a specific event where you do need the speed and the endurance. So from that point of view, it's been really helpful.
So where are you based day to day then when it comes to like normal training?
So it varies. So in May, I would have been based in Flagstaff, and since the recent bout of races, I've come back to Spain to train at altitude as well. And then I'll go back to a period of races after this, and then hopefully I'll go away to altitude again in August time before the World Championships. So, it's spread out a lot, but I feel like it's working.
Yeah, it certainly is. Am I right in saying you hadn't done altitude training for a number of years before Flagstaff this year?
I would have done it in 2018, but I suppose that year I was dealing with injuries, and there were other issues. So it was a case of, I suppose, doing the altitude training at a time when I was really able to benefit from it.
Prior to this year, your performances in Paris, as we saw last year, you had clearly got the best out of yourself to the point where you were proof that altitude training wasn't essential. It wasn't necessarily like a big sort of philosophical change this year or anything like that. It was just something new, a fresh approach.
Yeah, well, like, I suppose if you're comparing my performances this year to last year, like, even just in terms of being able to double the volume, that's been a massive improvement to my ability to race as well. And I wouldn't have used altitude before last year either. So it's a very small component. And like I said, they're all multifactorial. So there's lots of reasons to contribute. So, thankfully it's working out at the minute.
And is the reason why you couldn't double the volume before last year just because you were working as a doctor or training as a doctor at the same time?
It was more in terms of how to get there. That was kind of the main way I got there in the end. It's all working out at the minute.
Certainly. Was 144 something of a white whale for you, Mark?
Yeah, like, it's always been at the back of my mind that I could run 143. I think I said it whenever I started off in my career in like 2011 or 12 that I thought I could run 143 by the end of my career. So I've done that now and kind of moved on to set new goals since then. And I've agreed with my coach that I want to try break 143.5 at the minute. I think only 90 athletes have done that in the world today, so that would be a real nice thing to do. It's another challenge I can look forward to.
Were you hitting these times in training on the regular, or was this last month the best you've ever run under the public eye and in private, everything together?
Well, I knew I was in the best aerobic shape that I've been in coming into a season, so I knew I'd run 144 pretty easily. Yeah, like, in terms of the race pace training, I've always done that, and I've always managed to do 200s, 400s, or whatever the distance is at the required pace. But it's just being able to be more durable and to be able to recover quickly after them workouts, and to be able to back them up, especially whenever you come into the racing season, which is an important part of 800 meter training. So I guess it's kind of the durability that I've probably improved, and that's come about by the improved, I suppose, aerobic training that I've been doing.
It's interesting that you say that you had this target in your head for near the end of your career or later in your career. You always had the belief that it was going to be an upward graph for you, did you?
Yeah, like, I always knew I had the speed. So I guess whenever you look at other athletes' PBs and you compare yourself against them over a distance like 400 meters, for example, like, I would never have seen myself being that far away from guys that ran 142, 143. So I knew if I could get everything right, that it was possible.
When it comes to the other aspects of your training at the moment, are you training with many different partners? Is there less solitude or more solitude in the current setup?
So, yeah, there are other training partners. I would have trained with Tony Van Diepen from the Netherlands. He won Olympic bronze in the 4x400 meter mixed relay. I don't know if it was Olympic bronze, but he won a medal anyway. And I'm training with Josh Hoy, world indoor champion from China earlier in the year. Peter Ball is also in the group. He's finished fourth at the Olympic Games. So, like, there's a real good group of athletes there that I can... that I have trained with already, and like, I hope to be able to train with again for the rest of the year, because they really drive you on, and like, I'm a competitive athlete and just like they are, and I think being with those guys and being around them, you start to believe more in yourself too. I think it's been really beneficial.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, is there anything on a practical level that you can pick up from them, or is it purely motivational and in terms of belief, as you say?
Yeah, I guess maybe more in terms of the mindset. Like, when I was out in Flagstaff, it's just the conversation was, how do we run 139? It wasn't, how do we run 143? That wasn't coming from me, but like, that's just the mindset that these guys have. And it's good to surround yourself with them because it helps bring out the best in you as an athlete.
For sure. What was your reaction when the conversations are around 139?
I'm like, well, I need to take it one step at a time.
The mental preparation for this year as well. Have you done anything different? I know you've said in the past that you haven't really worked with any psychologists. It's not really something you felt necessary. Where do you stand on that at the moment? Has that changed at all this year?
No, I haven't worked with a psychologist, but I can definitely see a role for them. I haven't needed one to date.
Yeah. What is it, because you've never really felt issues, that you're always properly tuned in and that you can kind of be a self-psychologist in a way that, that maybe a lot of other people can't be?
Yeah, like I think there's a danger as an elite athlete of getting too many people involved, because then things can get quite murky. So like for me as an athlete, I'm kind of in control of what I do and, you know, the help I get from different people. And it is important to get that help, but it's just in terms of how many different, looking for the word, but like how many people you can reach out to. For me, it's just always been about keeping control of the amount of people that I reach out to, and it's helped me perform quite good this year.
How many people do you have in your team?
I'd say it's about, well, I mean, team is a the funny word there, because a lot of people come into team, don't they? So, you know, you're talking there about my girlfriend, my family, my coach, Justin, one of the physiologists I work with. And yeah, like, I mean, I suppose in terms of, and people have been talking about what's kind of caused the improvement of performances in general across many events recently in athletics, like, and I think information sharing is a big thing as well. Like, cause I mean, whenever I started off in the sport 10 years ago, it was quite hard to get that information. Now it's just available everywhere, you know? So, yeah, I think that's been a big contributor too.
Do you also feel like you're running your smartest at the moment, as well as looking at your best physiologically and fitness wise, aerobically? Like certainly in Apeldoorn, it felt that your races over the course of that week were executed brilliantly and came with outstanding plans. Is that also on a new level this year?
Well, I guess in terms of tactical preparation, my coach Justin has been really helpful in relation to that. So before every race, he'll have a plan going into it. And I think I said in an interview recently to The Independent that like he was able to predict how the race unfolded for Apeldoorn and the European Indoors this year. So having him in your corner is really helpful. And like from a personal perspective, like my own idea of what you need to be able to do in an 800 meters, I suppose has evolved just with what I've learned about the event. But I wouldn't say that there's been any massive shift in the last year.
What are the ambitions, or have you written out a goal for the World Championships this year?
Yeah, so the World Championships are obviously extremely competitive. Like, you know, if we're talking about being a world-class athlete, and defining that as being ranked top 20 in the world, because that's what it has been described as. Like, you're almost talking about the rarity being equivalent to being struck by lightning twice. Like, so it's quite a difficult thing to navigate around, to come up with the preparation for tactically. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you can do everything you can to try and make that world final. And that's all I'm going to try to do. I'm not going to say I'm capable of X, Y, or Z, because I know how many factors come into play. But for me, like at the end of last year, my goal this year was just to run the fastest time possible. And whatever comes after that is a very welcome bonus.
It's Mark English there speaking to Owen Sheehan off the ball as he looks ahead to continuing, I suppose, to try and reduce that Irish record at 800 metres ahead of the World Championships, which are taking place in the month of September. Now, local cricket games, which are taking place this coming weekend in the Northwest Senior Cup semi-finals. Brigade to go on Dunamana and Coleraine play New Buildings. Both of those matches are set to be held on Saturday. At the same time, the Sammy Jeffrey Shield semi-finals are taking place, with St Johnstone against Glendermot and Killy Clooney will play Ballyspallin. On Sunday, there's one Irish Senior Cup tie involving a North West side. Dunamana are on the road as they go to Dublin to play Balbriggan. And in the National Cup, there's two sides from the North West who are in action, and both are away from home as well. Glendermot are making the long trip to play County Kerry, and Ballyspallin are off to Terenure in Dublin. Finally this evening, we go to golf, and the fixtures for the Donegal Boys Youth Match Play Championships have thrown up some very interesting ties. 2024 winners Letterkenny will play last year's plate winners Dunfanaghy. The re-emergence of Strabane Golf Club has then put it against Ballybuffet and Stranorder. Buncrana will play Port Salon and Fannad. And in the Big Inishowen Derby, Ballyliffin will play Greencastle. In the Donegal Youth Plate match play, there is a south of the county battle with Donegal playing Nairn and Portnew. Ballybuffet and Stranorder take on Buncrana. Greencastle will play Letterkenny. And the Northern Derby will see Gidore play their neighbours Dunfanaghy as they look to defend the title. All the matches will be played over two legs and must be played by the 14th of July. And that brings an end to the Score programme for tonight. Don't forget, if you missed any of the show, you will be able to recap shortly on our website, highlandradio.com. That's your sport for today. Our next bulletin is tomorrow morning after the 8:30 news with Chris Ashmore. So until then, what's left of your Thursday, have a very good evening.